Hello and welcome to A Conversation with a Black Businesswoman with me, your host, Lillian Oliveri from Kale Accountancy, based in London, UK. In today's episode, we are joined by the lovely and beautiful Jennifer Opari Ayi, who is the founding director and CEO of JOA HR Consulting Limited, and is also the founder of Mary Sowa Foundation, which is a not-for-profit organisation. This lady is so amazing in what she wants to do for her people and for her community. She has a big heart, and I believe she will achieve what she sets out to achieve. Please make sure to follow her on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, and support when and where you can. A little warning for this episode in that there will be parts where Jennifer is very candid about what takes place in the village with young girls, and some may find this disturbing or upsetting. However, I hope you will understand the reason for being so graphic, and this will reveal why she is so passionate about the work she is doing in making a positive change for her community. As always, I hope this podcast is helpful, insightful, and provides some guidance and encouragement for those who are looking to start or have started on the road as an entrepreneur or as a business owner. So enjoy. Ah, just a little thing. A little plug here, which also Jennifer mentions near the end of this episode, a shout out to my husband, Angelo, who helped Jennifer sort out some computer issues she was having. He's an IT consultant and has his own IT company, Gem Angie Limited. So without further ado, let's jump into this next episode with Jennifer Opari Ayi. Hello and welcome to another episode of A Conversation with a Black Businesswoman with me, your host, Lillian Oliveri from Kale Accountancy based in London. And today we are joined by the lovely and beautiful and funny Jennifer Opari Ayi. How are you, Jenny?
I'm very well, thank you. I mean, thank you for giving me that title of being funny. I've bought that label before, but I'll take that one. I'll add it to my labels,
yeah. Yeah, I think you seem like a fun, from the conversations we've had, yeah. You seem like a fun person to be around. So I can't wait for us to meet up.
I don't intentionally try to be funny, but you know, I'll do my best to be funny today.
But Jennifer is a HR consultant. So she has her own business, which is JOA HR Consulting Limited. And you also run a charity. But before we get into that, like I always start with all my guests, how did you get started? Because it's a conversation with a Black businesswoman. Mm-hmm. And I tend to talk to women in general, so it's not just Black women. But what's always fascinating to hear is how you got started as a business. What motivated you? What was your drive? What was the reason for starting the business in the first place? A lot of questions there, sorry.
No, it's absolutely fine. My why for the business over the years have gone through what I called different transformations. So initially when I started, it was because I wanted to change the narrative. You know, I got tired of being in a corporate environment where I work all as hard as possible, you know, to be noticed. I go the extra mile. I work long hours. I compromise everything. And I'm always getting feedback, but I'm never in a position to be giving their promotion. There's always a reason why, you know, I'm not quite the right candidate for their job. And I think, you know, I made it as far as, I work mainly, or majority of my experience being in the NHS. So I got as far as like the AB level. And it was getting quite tiring. Like, okay, I know I'm capable of more. I get told I'm capable of more, but yet I'm not either giving honest feedback about where the gaps are so I can aspire to get there. Because there's a difference between me knowing where my gaps are and then the people managing me knowing where the gaps are. Somehow they've got to align. And when that feedback comes in and all you're getting is you're really good, you get tired. So I started off with, I just want to change the narrative. I want to set my own path. I don't want to wait for someone to see my value. I want to see what that value is. And you know, initially it wasn't necessarily HR. I had dabbled in different things. And that comes from my grandmother's inspiration. You know, she's always a fan of don't put all your eggs in one basket, have your formal qualification, but be able to eat from your hands. Which in other sense, if I did a literal translation, but actually what that means is you need to have some kind of vocational skills, whether it's sewing, cooking, whatever. So you're not just falling back on just one stream of income.
Yeah.
So I tried different things and it just wasn't like a natural fit. And then I thought, well, actually, there's no reason why I can't have HR on the side. So it was running a little bit like a side hustle.
Yeah.
And then I decided I wanted to make it full time. And but it started off with the narrative, changing the narrative to what I want it to be. Then the transformation of that why changed to a promise, rather, that my grandmother allowed me to enter into, which is my niece, who lives in Ghana. She wanted to be a doctor, although she's changed her mind now. She's now a teenager. And my grandmother wanted her to come to the UK for two reasons: to get the education to be a doctor, but because majority of the family are here, so she's got nieces and cousins who are the same age. And back home, she's the only child at home, so she doesn't have really anybody at her age group to play with. So my grandmother wanted her to come to the UK for those two reasons. So I agreed with her that I will support the project of her coming to live with me to get her education and obviously build a relationship with her cousins. Fast forward to end December 2017, my grandmother sadly passed away.
Sorry.
Thank you. That had, and is still something that I'm working through, but it had such a major impact. She wasn't sick, not that I wanted her to suffer. It was a sudden death, and I think the trauma of that probably affected me a lot more than I ever imagined. So I started to think around creating a legacy for her, because for me, it was quite important that beyond my generation and a generation after, her name doesn't, you know, disappear and, you know, buried in history books, that the legacy lives on. Because she lived to be, for me, she was my hero. You know, we talk about Black female leaders. My grandmother is it for me.
Yeah.
So I wanted her story to resonate with other people, and I wanted to inspire other people. And the only thing I can think of was having something that is very much about her, which is education, because she was denied education. She didn't have a formal college. And she was very passionate about that. She was such an advocate. And before I came to the UK to join my father, I know the sacrifices she made to keep me in education. So I set up, you know, the other side of the business, which is called Merisowa Foundation. It's not for profit and it supports children education back home in Ghana. And it's all about removing barriers to prevent children from being in education. But why for the HR consultancy changed? So it became, if I can get the HR consultancy to be bigger, and it serves more than me, then I can focus on the charitable sister company to support more children. You know, it started off as a legacy for my grandma, but being on the ground, and it's heartbreaking that in today's age, a child, you know, would drop out of school because parents can't afford to buy them notebooks, pens and pencils. And I don't know about your audience, but this is something that I used to get. A lot of people say, but education in Ghana is free. You know, public schools are free. I said, if you can get there, it's free.
But oh, you're okay.
From.
Yeah.
So, footwear. And we had kids when at the end of 2022, we had kids coming to school without footwear.
Oh, so wow.
They were walking in the hot weather, you know, on the sand, getting into school without footwear. You know, I'm one of my proudest achievements is to be in a position whereby donated goods collected over the years, we can bring a child, measure them up and give them a footwear. And just to see that smile on a child's face, it honestly is everything, is priceless. So it started off as a legacy. But I know that if I can enable a child to have a notebook, a pen and pencil to stay in school, they change the generation barriers in their family, because they can get to become somebody else and they can hopefully open the doors for other people in their family also to have education. And it's one of the things that drives me forward for my consultancy business. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
that's amazing. I remember me you talking about this, and even as you're speaking, I'm still amazed because for me, I not a lot of people know, but even though I'm British born, I grew up, spent quite a bit of years in Jamaica, being educated in Jamaica, and we had people in our district or village who, again, if their dad wasn't around or their mom wasn't around or they were just abandoned, it was a case of education wasn't an option for them, and it was a case of the people in the village or the district supporting that child. Like you, my grandmother looked after another person that we knew in the village. Fortunately, one of them, even though he went to school or whatever, he didn't take that route. He actually became a very successful. He's very good at farming, and he's dedicated his life to doing that. And he provides for himself, his family. He's got children. So I like the fact that how I was brought up is probably similar to you, is that you understand the value of community. It doesn't have to be blood family. It's community, people who are going to see you and say, there's more to life than this. I think as well, being in London especially, you can feel like you're in a bubble. You're kind of blindfolded, but there's a bubble that if you're not careful, you can forget what's happening around the world and in other parts of the world as well. So I applaud you for what you're doing, because it takes courage, and I can imagine it is a lot, especially when you think about the logistics.
I think I was a bit naive. So when I started talking to people about what I wanted to do, I had spoken to a few Ghanaians, and one of them said to me, I don't think you have any idea what you're starting. Yeah, they did. They said it'd be much easier to find other charities already operating, like British charities operating in Ghana, and then just support. And I said, well, I don't just want to give money. It's easy to give the odd £10, the odd 20. We can all probably make that sacrifice in today's age. And I said, I think I can make a change. And I think, you know, it's important that I make that change. Little did I know that when I started that journey, it was going to be the healing process for me. So it took me away from, I don't know if self-pity is the right word, but I was grieving. And it was affecting me, you know, outwardly. I was giving people the face of strong Black woman, you know, I'm coping, I'm doing really well. But internally, there was a lot that was going on. So focusing on doing something, and I'm going to be completely honest, you know, the idea when you're sitting in the UK is really great. And then you get on the ground, and I will have to credit my sister-in-law for the area that we discovered, because her and her husband, who's my cousin, go to a church that then decided to set up a branch. So on their way to the new branch, they found this community, and I call them the forgotten community.
Oh.
And the reason why I say that, people actually don't believe this place exists. It's on the way to a tourist place in Ghana. But okay. Off the main road, you know, where it's all tired, it's all lovely, and you've got the mountains and lovely estates and whatever. It's this community where I've never seen that level of poverty before, to that extent. Mm. And my family house, which is my grandmother's house, probably, let's say, 10 minutes drive. And my niece, who my grandmother wanted to come to the UK, the school she was going to, gated community, Catholic school, all nice, all the trimmings, everything. And literally 5 minutes walk from that school is the forgotten place. And it's a vast difference between the two.
Yeah.
So when I went back in November/December 2022, and my family came to help with the distribution of the clothes and the books and the notebooks, as well as the reopening of the school library, because we refurbished it. They were shocked. They were very, very shocked, because they're like, wow, I can't believe this place
exists. Yeah.
And I came back with the videos, and, you know, well, I said videos, I was posting them on social media, and a few people got interested, and they were messaging me, it's like, where's this place? And I'm telling them, it's off that road. And they're like, really? I'm like, yes, seriously, it exists. So yes, I mean, like I said, it's heartbreaking to see a child coming to school without footwear or with ripped uniforms. But they have the loveliest smile on their face. I mean, you're looking at it heartbroken and you're like, oh, wow. But it's much deeper and worse than even the eye can see. I remember going to the school on my first day, and I think they were looking and thinking, like, why? And then I showed up again the second day, and one of the teachers who knew me because of the work that we did with the library came to see me to have a conversation. He said, oh, this is your second day coming in. I said, yeah, I'm just observing because I really want to know what the need is. And it's like, okay. So, you know, Jennifer, with a British way of thinking, you've got this massive piece of land. The school is not gated, and you can also build more classrooms because you've got the land. Because what I discovered on the second day is they do shifts. The school does shift work, believe it or not.
So I've done that before. I've done that.
It was such an experience because the school, the classroom, I think probably should be able to accommodate about 20, but you have three times the amount. And that's just the first shift. So instead of 7.5 hours in the school, the kids will have 4 or 3.5, and then the second shift will come along. But the windows are all broken. The flooring, honestly, I just can't even imagine how they sit there breathing the dust and everything without getting any kind of lung or respiratory problems. And then the furniture, that at least two people should sit on. You've got three, and they're trying to angle themselves in a way. So I got to see things a whole lot more, which I wouldn't have if I was just giving the odd £10 here and there. So it's massive. And then, of course, when we had the cameramen on the ground, there were also British people who have relocated to England. The wife said to me, oh, some of these, because this is like a primary school, said, some of these kids, they look like adults. And I said, Yeah. What's happening is they drop out of school. Mm-hmm. You're talking about sometimes a family of 6 or 7.
Yeah. My
dad can afford, or there's no dad. Mm. Therefore, I'm going to pull out the oldest child to go and work so that there's more hands working to feed the family. What's going to happen is the child will go and maybe after several months re-enter into the school again. But she said, this is not right. They shouldn't be mixing with kids. I said, it's not right. But we can make a change. You know, we can stand here talking about what's right and what's wrong. This is what it is. And we can cry about it and go back to our lovely homes and forget about it. But this is overwhelming, and that's okay. I can only do the best I can to make that change. So it wasn't supposed to set up support one school. But at the moment, I don't feel like I can walk away from that school because the need is just, it's
so, vast. Yeah, so great. And when you said school shift, I remember when I first was taken to Jamaica, I was probably about 8, 9. And the first school we went to, because it was in a city, again, like you, in a city, but where we were, it was a nice built up area. But the school was massive. And coming from a small school in West Bromwich, and then going there and then going into class, I was outside. I was outside with my, because my mum took me to class and then was like going to disappear, or my gran, I can't remember who it was. And I was outside and the class was ram packed. Mm-hmm. And I was on the morning shift.
Oh, wow.
And then I had to fight. And then again, coming from England, I never went to school by myself, walked to school. I always had either my sister or an adult, or my parent, or my dad, one of my parents walking me to school. I had to learn fast. I had to walk to school by myself, walk. I hated evening shift because it's like walking this dusty road from Waterford. I think it's called Waterford Primary or Second. Can't remember what it's called, Waterford. But shift school is the only place I've seen with my own eyes and experience shift school, where because the kids, there were so many kids, they had the morning shift, then you had the evening shift, and then the following week you switch over, then you become the evening shift, and then that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand completely, but I think what you're doing is amazing. I mean, how are you finding, because the whole reason why you've started the HR consultancy is so you can support this charity.
Yeah.
How are you finding it as a Black woman in Britain running your own business?
I think there's two responses to that question.
Yeah.
And the first question, and I'm not going to try and sugarcoat it, is what every possibly business owner experience, which is the lack of capital in supporting the business. Because you, when you're a micro business, you wear several hats, basically. So you've got, you know, trying to develop the business, trying to find clients and work with the client, and trying to be all things to man in that business. So the challenge is there, and it can be stressful at times when you don't have consistent clients that you can say each month, I know exactly what I can expect in terms of income. So that there is that challenge there. And I think, as a Black person, there is always that barrier, because not everybody is going to like you because of your color of your skin. And there is no way to sugarcoat that. And there's no way to pretend that it doesn't happen. It does. Sometimes even with my name, you know, I laugh, and it's not funny, but people say, oh, all these things about racism isn't enough, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, let me give you an example, you know, of living next door to my neighbor. He's called me Jennifer because that's the name I gave him. And then one day knocking on my door and asking me, is your name really Jennifer? So I'm like,
pardon?
Well, yes. So I'm like, now, how do I answer that exactly? You know, would you like to see my birth certificate? Because it's like, I told you my name's Jennifer. You've called me Jennifer for 5 years. So why are you now coming to ask me if my name is really Jennifer? And I try to be as polite as possible to use the opportunity to educate, because in my head, I'm thinking this has to be ignorant, you know. So let me use the opportunity to educate. So I said, can you tell me why you are asking this question? Because I'm, you know, I'm really struggling here. It's like, oh no, I've just been told that Nigerians have, you know, the official names and like to be known by another name. I said, okay. Number one, you know, I'm not Nigerian because I told you I'm Nigerian. So how have I become Nigerian now and been put in the same bowl as Nigerian?
Oh Lord.
I said, number two, there is some truth in that, but the reason why they do that is because people are not making the effort to learn your name and pronounce it. So they give you a name that's easy for you. They modify themselves for your benefit. Does that answer your question of human? And then there's the issue of being a woman running a business and how other people sometimes see that. So there's, I said two responses, there's three. There's the complexity of being a woman, which probably applies to every woman. And there's that with being Black, and then the challenges of running a micro business. So it's not a walk in the park, and it's running a business is great, but it's not for everybody, because it will humble you. No, it will.
For real.
Honestly, yes. But, you know, you also have the freedom to choose your time, to choose the projects. And, you know, you make mistakes. I've made mistakes. I'm now at a point where it doesn't matter what money you throw at me, as desperate as I am for the money, not just for myself, but for the projects I want to do. I'm thinking, does this align to my values? You know, am I going to be compromised to do something that I'm uncomfortable with? So there's all of that that brings a layer of challenge. Somebody doesn't want to even bother to pronounce your name, and I think Jennifer is easy enough, but you know.
Oh Lord.
It's one of those things, really. And you know, sometimes you rise above comments and you dismiss them. But I know I would dismiss it, but it doesn't mean I want to work with you. And you know, I'll close that relationship. Otherwise I might as well stay in the corporate world. So if I want to change the narrative, then I need to make sure that I'm not just signing a client because I need the money. And it's not easy, because, you know, you're in the middle of the month. Bills are coming out. You need to pay bills and pride. But it's more than pride.
Yeah.
It's standing for something and being convicted with what you stand for. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the challenge. Two things come to mind. I think it was something that Roz said in a podcast I did with her, actually, about the fact that if you're on LinkedIn and you've got your picture of, obviously you're a black woman, and then you picture whatever and they look at your profile, and the fact that there it's the decision to whether the decision as to whether they do business with you mm-hmm. is based on what you look like. Mm-hmm. She said, well, would you really want to do business with them? Mm-hmm. Number one. But then I remember, I don't know if you watch, I'm always quoting movies in podcasts because I always see my husband just watch movies all the time and TV shows. But I love this. I'm a big fan of Bernie Mac.
Yeah.
And he did that show called Guess Who? And it was basically the white guy dating his daughter, who's a black girl. Mm-hmm. I remember him in the movie saying to the Ashton Kutcher character, mm-hmm. saying he left the job because the boss didn't like the fact that he was marrying a black girl, but he would outrightly say that to his girlfriend and the family. He kept that to himself. Mm-hmm. But Bernie Mac's character found out that was the issue. Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen the movie, telling you now. But basically, and Bernie Mac turned around to him and said, you'll lose money if you keep doing that. Mm-hmm. If you keep turning down jobs just because of what they think of you. Mm-hmm. But I understand that aspect of what you're saying, in the sense of sometimes it is pride, and sometimes, especially, you have to be balancing, well, I need the money and I income, but can I work with this? Do they align with my values, my moral values, and all these other ethics and things that are going on for me personally and as a business? Mm-hmm. But I think for me, I've had that struggle as well, where I've had to, and oddly enough, it's not just also about, like you say, mm-hmm. the color of your skin, but also your gender, the fact that I'm a woman. Mm-hmm. Where I had a client, well, not a client, so someone who, I think because of how I looked, mm-hmm. they could take the free advice, but they wouldn't pay me.
Yeah, basically. That's a lot.
So I did the Zoom call, and I get this a lot with a certain networking group, I won't name them, but they'll call me. Mm-hmm. And of course, but the joke is, there's a picture of me on the networking group, on the website. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, they call me, see me. So I won't be done up like I've got my pictures posted up, because I don't live like that. I ain't got time to do makeup in the morning, that kind of thing. I ain't got time. It's eyeliner, and that's it. Or if I ever do eyeliner, but mascara, because I've got great lashes and whatnot. And then I'm bounce, put a lippy on, and I'm good to go. So when they come on screen, it's like this person. And I'm thinking, they'll ask me for everything, you know. And I've had to say, okay, this is where I draw the line and say, because my husband's saying, why are you giving out free advice? If they want to use you, they'll use you. But they'll just see this person come online on Zoom and then go, yeah, we have business all now. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, as much as I love the freedom and the ability to do what I can, and I have amazing clients now, and I'm still looking to ramp up the business, it's just disheartening to come across people in the 21st century, in 2024, mm-hmm. who still have that mentality that I can take.
There is another layer of complexity, and it's how you look, how you sound. And I know people usually do business with people if there is that relatability and connection. But sometimes if you don't quite sound, you know, right, somebody may also decide not to work with you. But there is the layer of religion. And for whatever reason, I'm a woman of faith. And every time I say that, it's not in how people, it's not the words that people speak. I'm a master of body languages, by the way. It's how their body language change and how you can tell facially, I'm uncomfortable with this and can get on quickly and get to the point. And then they'll sidestep as if you haven't said anything about that and go, and I'm thinking, if we're in this is now the world of, you know, inclusivity, then it should be okay for me to say my resilience comes from my faith without you getting uncomfortable about that. You know, or my inspiration comes from the stories I take from the Bible, and it gives me hope to want to press on and do well. So I don't really understand why you'd be uncomfortable with it. But religion is one of it. So you almost feel as if you have to present one side of you that doesn't touch on your belief. And then that's fine, because for most time you don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
There are times where in relating to someone, maybe because it's a business lunch or something happens, and you should just be okay to say, oh, okay, you know, I understand this very well. This very resonates with me because I read a chapter in the Bible and this is how I need to cope with it. And that should be fine. But for whatever reason, people's body language, and I would rather, to be honest, they say it point blank, I'm uncomfortable with this, but their body language will change, their facial expression will change. Some people are more skilled in schooling their facial expression, but you still pick up on it. Yeah, so there is also some complexity. So,
and I think that's the challenge, isn't it, running the business in that. Yes, this I'm the business owner, and this is what I'm about. I'm a woman of faith as well. My thing is, does that negate or diminish the value of service that I'm going to offer for you, mm-hmm. or how well I'm going to do your work? Mm-hmm. If anything, I think if I'm a woman of faith, there should be a level of integrity, honesty about how I present myself and what I do. And that will come across with how I work with my clients as well, in that if they try to do something, I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They won't need to know. They don't need to necessarily hear me say I'm a Christian, but there's certain things that I will like, I can't do that. I'm sorry. So I will do whatever I need to do according to the accounting rules, procedures, policies, etc. Like I said, I enjoy what I do. I love it. Even my husband said, you seem more happier. Whereas in my last job, I was stressed. Like you. It was this thing of, oh, yeah, we'll see you. We'll like to see you do this. But in 5 years' time, I'm like, who's sticking around for 5 years in the same job doing the same thing? Who?
Here's the thing. But because they know you're willing and you work hard, things are given to you. Because they rely on you to get it done. And I have done things above the grade that I was in and delivered it really well. And it's not just based on what I'm saying, but it's based on the feedback coming. So if I can do that, if you can challenge me, if you can stress me and stretch me, then why am I not? I know leadership is slightly different from having expert knowledge. But if there is a leadership program that can make me that leader,
then
even if it's not fun, tell me about it, let me go out and get the skill set. Because I may think I'm perfectly okay, I may look at job description thinking, I can do that, maybe I need a little bit of help on and this and that, but you know, 60% to 70%, I think there's a lot in here that I can do. I mean, I sometimes coach other HR professionals, and one person that I've been coaching, I said, look, climbing up doesn't change the knowledge. It's their authority that changes the different levels. Because the HR knowledge is not going to change because you're an HR director. The law is the law. Everything else is the same. But it's being able to have the authority in the boardroom and how you present yourself. And that exposure is not just going to come overnight unless someone exposes you to that. So sometimes you've got to make that room for that person.
Yeah.
And this may not be popular, but I say to people, look, I like to change the narrative. So if I'm in an environment, I'm thinking this is where I want to get to, and I'm not getting the help to get there, then the question I'll ask myself is, how can I make that investment to get that help? And do I need to stay in that environment to be that person? No. And sometimes it's okay to change jobs, and you must not be afraid to do that. But we get into this zone, oh, my mortgage is coming out, oh, I need to renew my mortgage, blah, blah, blah. Talk to the right people, because you find out that you have more options, you know, available to you, and you don't have to stay in an environment that's making you stress. Life is way too short. Put yourself through all of that.
And it's finding wise counsel when you are at those positions or those stages in life where, like you say, like me and you, we get to a point where it's like, this is where we just see you and there's nothing further. Or if there is something further, then it's a case of, oh, you have to wait 5 years to then prove yourself more. Mm-hmm. The role that you're in isn't changing. You're still doing more, or if not more, but then it's a case of, or even the role that you want to aspire to, but it's a case of, in terms of the title, in terms of the money, that's not changing. So I think it's about finding wise counsel about how can I maneuver myself rather than just get up and leave, because obviously you still have bills to pay. But it's about finding wise counsel about, let me have a strategy in place and a plan, two different things, about how do I move forward and where I want to go and arrive at.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you finding business at the moment?
I think it's a bit early this year to say, but last year my plan was to increase my visibility because I stepped into running the business full time. So even though I've had the business for a long time, I almost treated it as a startup company because it was the first time I had gone into it full time, not necessarily relying on referral, but running the business in the way that it needs to do run. So I spent a lot of last year investing to raise the visibility, which I think I now have achieved. There's still things that I need to do. So I started the weekly LinkedIn Live. Again, it's about visibility and raising my authority. And what I now want to do, the next phase, is to do lead generation to try and get more clients. Now that I've done a bit of the visibility, hopefully when someone type my name or type my business name, they can find me and they can find things that I've done. So it's the next stage, and I want to try and really focus this time around this year in having more clients, because the focus for me isn't just about the HR business. It's about, I made a promise when I left December 22 that I said I will build classroom, restore existing classroom and maintain. But it's not easy. It's expensive business. I asked my cousin who lives in Ghana to go and have a look and have things measure up. And the feedback I got, not the breakdown of how much it will cost, this is a lot of work, to which I said, I'm perfectly aware of that. But I was there. Sorry for myself. I'm like, I don't need to see the videos. I mean, they'll be useful for the people here that may want to support it. But I saw things for myself firsthand, which is how I started. All the objectives going to be build, restore, maintain. So I don't need the feedback that says it's a lot of work. How much would it cost to at least start with one project? So for me this year, I want to end the year returning to give more clothes, more books, more pencils, but build at least one classroom. I want to honor that promise. I would like to do more, but I want to try and do that. So I need to get more clients in so that I can afford to go, Ghana to do this project. Yeah.
Do you do charity? Your reason and is so much more, I should say, I don't know how to put this any other different way, but like there's an emotional attachment to the charities in there because of the connection with your grandma. Mm-hmm. So there is so much pressure on making that successful. But in order for that to be successful, the HR consultancy business has to be successful as well. So there's that pressure, isn't there, in getting the clients in. Have you ever thought about doing fundraising for the charity separately?
You've hit the nail on the head, exactly. The pressure for the business and the non-for-profit side, it's huge. And mainly because I made a promise and I don't want to break the promise. So yes, going back to answer your question specifically about fundraising, I'm going to take you back a journey, 2028. So my grandma died in December, and for anybody listening who's not Ghanaian, funerals in Ghana, they're huge and very expensive, more than weddings or anything else.
Oh, wow.
So, to do the preparation and everything else, I would even say got lucky to bury her in February 2018. My father was over 6 months to bury him.
Wow.
Not going to go there and bore you with it. It's a whole different conversation for another day. So we buried my grandma February 2018. And, I went into this bubble of shutting down, because if I shut down, it's not really happening. But I also knew that we will have to prepare ourselves to go back the following year to unveil the tomb, which is a whole nother ceremony in itself the year after. So the idea of what legacy can I create, I was thinking through that in 2018, and then I got really sick. So it wasn't until October when I was well enough. And being me, I'm going to launch this charity. I'm going to do fundraising. in December 2018 because we're going back in February 2019 and I want to be able to start, you know, the charity on the ground. Now, that was a good idea, but I was naive. Did I do the fundraising charity? Yes, in a hotel. Yes, or one woman show. That is not something I would recommend. However, where I say I was naive is when you don't have that much of a presence, because, you know, I hadn't used social media to my advantage. It was all who I thought I can reach out to that I thought because of the emotional connection, automatically they would lend their support. And that actually wasn't the case. It was learning on the ground, connecting with other people on social media who have gone through something similar, done a fundraising, getting ideas from them. But it was a lot to do. So the ball did happen. Tick. Had people there that I didn't know. Ticked. So raised the profile of the charity. But I didn't make any money to take back.
Oh, no.
And I think, you know, on reflection, I think that money that went into the ball could have gone, and the time could have gone into.
Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
And then, of course, but there was a lot of feedback that you need to do again. But what I needed to do was I needed to take a step back and re-strategize about how I was going to do it. Because I definitely didn't want to be doing decoration sales, all of the others trying to get sponsors, all that. It was just too much.
It's a lot.
Then we went into COVID, so everything was at a standstill. However, this year I do want to do a fundraising event, because if I can raise my own money and have it matched by people's donation, yeah, and I do two schools, that will be the best for me, the best kind of achievement ever in my entire life. You got to live for something, don't you? And for me,
yeah,
that's not my purpose. So if I can get to do that, that would be great. You're the second person this week to have asked me, is there any plans for charity? And the person actually offered to come and take photographs for free.
Wow.
Virtually also when I get there and doing things on the ground, they will do virtual pictures as well. So that was a really great motivation, because I feel like now I know a whole lot more people because of being visible. Yeah. So hopefully the number of people I know is larger than the people I knew back in 2019 when I decided to do the ball, that the level of success, I think, will be a bit different.
Yeah. And hopefully social media can help as well, in the sense, yeah, if you post more on social media,
yeah,
and even talk, just reach out to companies, standard. Yeah. Reach out to companies saying, this is what we're doing, this is the charity, do you want to support it?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
do you want one of your directors to come with a free ticket if you can, yeah, support?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
things like that, Sainsbury's, Tesco, Asda, whoever.
Yes.
Just go for the big companies.
I need to get a team, because the last time I was trying to do all of this myself, reaching out to companies and trying to meet with them and then trying to explain the story. You know, we didn't even have a website. You know, so I'm now trying to get someone to do their website, writing the website, getting the website, then trying to do the ball, you know, at the background. It really was a lot, but I think I needed it. I needed the project in order to find my way on the path of healing. So I didn't really see how much it took out of me. And I think the thing with grief is when you block it, it has a way of manifesting in different ways. So I was blocking it. I wasn't sleeping. I was barely eating, barely looking after myself. But then, you know, I'll be getting up, going to this networking to talk about my ball, going here to talk about, look at this great. I had nothing to show to them why they should support my charity and not, you know, ActionAid or any of the, you know, and some of them, I think, the Ghanaians in particular, looking at the thing, thinking, we don't think you know what the heck you're doing. You know, because this is much bigger than you think, you know. I talk about sponsorship, my first website, I talk about sponsorship and how we're going to talk about that. And I remember going into this networking meeting, like, yeah, I thought I've got everything nailed, you know. It's going to be a form, it's going to be a panel, there's going to be that. And the first question they asked me was, how are you going to send the money out of the country? I'm like, what do you mean? There are, you know, all these various apps that you send the money, they won't allow you to do that. So that for me was an eye-opener. However, I have since learned that you have to put that information into the right context. So what I reached out to this company that supports people to apply to, for charity yeah. status. And what they said to me is, it's not that you can't take the money out of the country. If, for example, the charity is funded by the lottery, they will want you to use the money for UK charities.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
That's the distinction. But if you do a ball where you fundraise or people donate, you can take the money outside. And actually, in 2022, when I was doing the work, it was all funded by me, but I was just posting pictures. I wasn't thinking of anybody funding it. It was a couple of people saw it, reached out to me and said, oh, I want to be part of this. How can I help? I don't know a lot, but this is how much I can give. And the close donation were people from my estate and people that I know. And I had a double room full of clothes and you know, some toys that their children didn't want. A lot of them were brand new. And the storybooks were donated. So I only had to buy the notebooks, the pencils, and to be in a position where something somebody didn't want. And I can't even say that, because there were a bag from one of my neighbors full of Next baby clothes.
Yeah.
That we were able to give out. So I started off not expecting help from anybody, because I didn't want to assume anything. And literally, it was people seeing my posting that reached out to me to say, are you still collecting things? Even last week, I don't want to see my living room. I had toys donated to me by a friend of a friend. And people do that. They come in and they just call me, oh, I can't give you money, but are you still collecting clothes? I said, yes, please send it to them. And out of the blue, somebody from my church messaged me and said, I want to pay for one barrel to be shipped to Ghana. He gave him the gun. And I was just so overwhelmed, because I hadn't gone out to ask people for money and for her to remember. And it comes to the video. So, yes, I need to do more posting, but the plan is to do a ball. And I think this summer I'm going to try and get one or two people to help me, so that I'm not trying to run a business, trying to do everything to do with the charity. But yes.
Yes, definitely find the right team.
Yeah.
Team up to support you, know what the vision is.
Yeah.
And work alongside you with that. So it takes a lot of the pressure off you. Yeah. Running a business like we've said earlier, it's no joke. It's you know what I mean? There are days when, yes, you might, like for me this week, you know, it's been a lot of long, long days. And then yesterday it was like, okay, I need a day where I can just lie in. And I was able to do that and then start the day at 11:30.
Yeah.
But it just affords you that flexibility, doesn't it?
It does. So, go ahead. And I suppose the thing with, the whole fundraising thing is, it's also an opportunity to socialize and connect, because it's not just an opportunity to give away your money. And I think what I learned from doing the first ball, I can write a whole book on it, not even a chapter, is it was a 5-star hotel in Beckton somewhere? No, not Beckton. It begins with B. I can't remember the name of it. And 3-course meal.
Oh, wow.
Entertainment. All for £50. And the comments, honestly, the comments from people, like, you're trying to scam them. And I'm thinking, £50 for a 3-course black tie dinner where you get music, you're entertained.
That's what I was about to say. That sounds quite cheap. for a charity event.
Yeah.
But it's charity. Fundraising. So you're supposed to pay a bit more.
I think that's where I was naive, because, you know, I tried to make it as cost effective as possible. I think the hotel gave me a certain numbers, but if I cost it at £50, whatever the proceeds were, would then, you know, they get their I get some. And that's where the complexity was, because I have to be able to sell that amount of tickets, and I wasn't able to. Just because you have, and I think I posted this on the charity Facebook platform, that just because you have a great vision, it doesn't necessarily mean that people will support you. Sometimes, quite rightly, people are watching you to see how far you're going to go with this, before they will add, you know, their voice to, or their weight to it. Because, like I said, sometimes it's also easier to give £10 to an established charity. As other people have told me that, to be honest, more people have told me that there's all these charities doing the same thing. I'm like, I don't think really one more is going to do any harm, because I think the work that needs to be done is underestimated. And we should never live in a world where a child doesn't have a basic footwear, you know, go to school, and they will end up dropping out of school because of that. And, you know, the response I get is, well, it's much deeper than that, that the parents need to stop having children. I said, yes, that's also true. That's also true. However, it's not as simple as that. You know, what I can tell you, having been on the ground, is some of these children become victims and they're abused, because you come from a large family, there isn't enough to go around. And not so good, sorry to say this, a man may look at this child and offer the child food and then sleep with the child.
Oh my God.
Protect the child, you know, and get the child in a family way. But you're talking about people who themselves are barely making, surviving.
Yeah.
But of course, when you're a child and you're really hungry, I'm not talking about skipping two meals a day and just, that's a choice. I'm talking about going days without food and not really knowing when the next meal is going to come. That must be stressful for a child. It's stressful for an adult, never mind a child. So if there is a promise of a food, your immature brain is not thinking about looking at you. I don't even think that you can afford three hot meals, never mind me. But what these men do, unfortunately, they impregnate these children.
Yeah.
They don't get pregnant. They go back falling out of school. So they're now in a system whereby they didn't have enough to eat, and they barely had a decent roof over their heads. And then they've given birth to a child. So how is the child now going to be in school? The next man will come along, because you're now even more vulnerable, because you've got a child promises you the world until they get what they want.
Yeah.
Then baby number two.
It's a cycle.
You know, at the day we were distributing the stuff, my sister was with me, actually, and hopefully she's not going to kill me for saying it. I remember her saying to one of the women, you know, very annoyed with me. She was very angry, threatening me with physical violence, because I said it's two items each so that everybody can get something. And she said, no, I've got six kids. My sister's like, listen, when you had the second child, you should have stopped. You should have known by now that the men are deceiving you. You should have stopped. We're not here to give you six outfits. And I said, let her go, because what you're trying to do is to make this basic and simplified, but it is not.
Yeah.
When someone is living in an uncompleted building, there's no roof, there's no door. I said, think about that.
Yeah.
You know, you're not protected from the outside world. You're in an uncompleted building. A man comes, they have one single room that they're renting. That's an elevation above what you have. So you would give your virtue to this person. And of course, once they got what they want, they don't want an extra mouth to feed. But you're breaking it down, making it look so basic and so simple.
Yeah, making it's not as simple. It's not as black or white, is it? Yeah.
Yeah. And we in my grandmother's house, this lady comes, she does hand washing.
Yeah.
That's what she does for a living. She's got about six kids. And before I knew the kids were her, I'd walked into the house. So I was staying in my auntie's house, which is, so my grandmother's house is up the hill and my auntie's house is on the main road. So I walk up the hill and the kids were there. I looked and thinking, who are they? Why do you see, what are they waiting for? What are they sitting there? Like, my auntie's like, oh, they're waiting for food. I'm like, I said, well, what's going on? So just give them food. I said, oh, no, they're going to do this and do that. I said, no, these are like 5-year-olds. I'm like,
oh my gosh, yeah.
Just give them the food. But I think there's also a pride with the mother going with them and getting them to help, because then they feel like they're working and earning a living. But your heart will break because they are wrong. And what she's in that position now where she just wants to give the children to anybody that can look after them. And that's not necessarily safe either. So I was really distraught by what I was seeing. My auntie's like, wait till you see where she lives. Then you understand why she's in that state of desperation. Because, you know, she goes through from house to house to house to wash clothes. She gets paid, but it's not enough. The uncompleted building isn't hers. It's someone else's uncompleted building. She's living on the land. So there's no doors, there's no roof, and, you know, I think it's not even, the structures are not even safe. So when it rains heavily, water is even pouring in. She wants something better for her children. So basically the people she's watching, washing clothes for, she's like, you're better than me. You can have my child. My child will be safer with you. It's that bad.
It's that bad.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to be done. You've got a lot of work to do. And if the charity can help even a little bit in that small village, in that small community, I think it'd be a, you know, your grandma will be looking down from you and saying, well done, Jennifer, well done.
My greatest regret is that I didn't start this when she was alive. I'd done it, but I think she would know that the capability and the interest and the drive, something to honor her,
was
going to come from me. So I think I'm now comfortable with that knowledge, and I'm not living with the regret, because when she died, the first thing I said was, I'm not ready. Someone rewind the clock to give me time to prepare and tell her all the things I want to tell her before she's taken out. And sometimes you have to make peace with certain things under control.
It's just about that, making peace and, you know, making her memories live on.
Yeah.
And the legacy, and this is a great legacy. Definitely send me the charity details and your Facebook charity group as well, and I'll definitely post that on my socials. It's a great work that you're doing, and all through your talent, your gift, your profession, really, which is in HR consulting.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't even touched on that much.
We haven't touched on that.
We might have to do a part two, because one of the questions. One of the questions I was going to ask, and we'll wrap it up quickly, is that HR is one of those areas that people always either, there's always an expression on their face when you mention HR, because there's a perception that HR is the worst, unfortunately, can be come across as the worst department of a company. But I think that's based on sometimes the lack of experience, sometimes the people who in those departments that are running it, sometimes. And sometimes that I talk from experience, one company where it was a massive law firm, and it's almost like this cold-hearted attitude towards staff because there was a merger going on. So it's like, I just need to do what I need to do so I can get mine and you can do whatever you want to do. That sometimes that comes across. Then there's the other aspects of HR where people only call on HR when the problem arises. It's not a preventative, rather than it being preventative. And I hold my hand up. I did that last year. Unfortunately, I could call on my sister. Thanks, JD. My sister is a HR specialist as well. Who was able to help me.
HR specialist.
Yeah, so I've got quite I know quite a few HR specialists as well, and Dean as well from my church, who can give you advice. But it's always that department or that area where people tend to lead to the last minute, unfortunately.
And even people running business, one of the frustrating thing I find is when you're talking to potential client, the first thing is, I haven't got any employees, you know, when I do, I'll call you. I'm like, that's the wrong mentality, because what you're going to do, you will probably call me at the point when you've advertised, appointed, and you need a contract, or you downloaded, we're still downloaded a contract from the internet, giving it to the person, and then problem rises and you're calling me. I said, that's reacting. If you have planned to grow, you need to have a conversation of, what does that look like? Am I going to bring people in? And if I'm bringing people in, are they going to be freelancers? Are they going to be employees? So the thinking needs to start in the same way as you do your business plan. It shouldn't be you get to a point, oh, I think I need someone now. Okay, then quickly advertise. Sometimes it's not even a proper advert. I had a conversation with someone who said, oh, I appointed someone, they're coming in the business. I'm like, but I didn't consider anybody in the business. I said, why? Because none of them have the skills. So I said, you do know that it's reasonable to open it up, because you've made a judgment that you know everything about these people. And I said, but where did you advertise? They didn't advertise. They didn't tell the people. I said, but what would you have lost if you have informed people in the organization that, look, this post is coming up, it's going to be advertised, here's the closing date, if you're interested, put in an application. What would you have lost? It's the same outcome. If you truly believe they're not qualified for it, then let them prove it. And then they were looking at me like, oh.
Yeah. And that's the thing with HR, is shedding that different light. Because I remember my sister saying to me that I should have taken a different route or route with something rather than make it so formal. And yeah, I learned. So now going forward with employing, I said, okay, I need to think about that now. If I do ever take on more staff, it's going to be completely different.
Your sister is absolutely right. And unfortunately, I agree with you that for whatever reason, HR, more often than I care to say, does have a bad reputation. But I'm going to touch on something that your sister said about taking a different route. Quite often when people come to me, they want to do an investigation. I'm like, it's your right to raise a complaint for an investigation to be done. That's what you want to do. But you know, it's not closure. It's very stressful and you need to understand that before you go in. I'm not saying don't go in. It is very stressful and it's probably more stressful than you can ever envisage because there will be emotions that you can display that you, and I said, even when the investigation is finished and someone tells you, oh, you were right, it is not the end because there's a breakdown when you formalize something on paper against someone you work with. You need to think about how they're also receiving that and how they're going to work with you after that process is finished. And I know there are HR people that will just do the investigation. That's the end of it. It's not the end of it. It's actually the start of another problem if that relationship is not repaired.
Yeah. We can talk, man. We can talk. I feel like we can still carry on talking about it. I'm going to wrap this up. But thank you so, so much, Jennifer Apari Ayi. You've been an amazing guest and I loved your story. And I'm going to shout out and thank Anita as well for this recommendation for you as a guest. You've been tremendous. Please, please, please send me your Facebook page. I will definitely include it in the description.
We'll do.
Also share it on Facebook and all my other platforms. Are you on Instagram by any chance or just on LinkedIn?
I am on Instagram and Facebook. And so both the charity and the HR bit is on Facebook as well as LinkedIn. And of course, my personal page is also there. I can definitely, you know, complete disclaimer, do a lot more posting. And whether I need to hire a social media person to do that for me, it's probably the next face, because I can't do it all. In as much as I think a woman, you know, I'm mature enough to say there's some things I need to let go. Allow other people to do it, so that the I'm going to use the word visibility that it needs.
I'll make a recommendation about the social media person because she does mine.
Okay, I'm
sure I've had her for over a year. So people actually think that I post, do all my posting. I don't, because I started off that way. And then I realized I was doing that, waking up in the morning, trying to do that, then do work. I was like, no, I need to, there are certain things that you need to say, cost effective. And can I, my time is more valuable getting more business in and working than actually doing social media posts. So I think that was the thing for me. Megan is amazing. She's brilliant. So I'll send you her details.
Thank you.
Shout out to Megan as well for doing such amazing work with my post. And she also helps with my website content, which I'm changing slightly this year as well. So last but not least, the final question. What encouragement would you give a person who wants to start up their own business, whether it's a female, male, HR business, whatever? What would be your encouragement for them if they wanted to start their own business?
I would say... first thing that I feel that everybody forgets is start off with building your mental resilience and make sure that you have a plan for looking after yourself firstly. Then build yourself several networks, because you can have different networks play different roles. You can have the network that will build you up spiritually if you know you have faith, and you can have the network that will refer clients onto you. And you can have the network who have the expertise in the field that you're in that you can tap into when you're unclear or unsure of, you know, advice or the direction of travel. So for me, it's not just about one network. I think it's several networks, but you need to invest time in knowing, because not every network is going to be the right fit
for you.
And then thirdly, make sure you focus on where the capital will come from. It needs to come from more than one place. So make a list of all the jobs that you can do. If the banks are not giving you money, family's well is dry, you need to be able to survive so that you can focus on your business. So whether it's Uber delivery, Amazon, selling on Amazon, or hosting international students, just make a list of everything that's possible and how much money can bring you, and have what that's a minimum to survive. So you don't find yourself in a situation whereby there's no money and therefore you're parking the business because you now need to go to the corporate world to make sure the money's coming in. And finally, what I would say is be convicted in your reason for starting the business. Because there will be moments where you will doubt yourself. And if you don't have a strong why, you will throw in the towel, because it's hard work. It really is.
I like that last bit, the conviction. As to why you started in the first place, because it's easy. I've done that actually, because I said to my husband, if this don't work out, you know, I, as much as I don't like it, and it's like you're saying it to yourself and saying it out loud to convince yourself, but really, truly, deep down, you know that is not the path for you. But it's difficult. Yeah. It's difficult. But I like that thing about having multiple streams of income or ways you can get in income, and it doesn't have to be like, I suppose sometimes it can be on social media about multiple streams of income. You're thinking probably investments, stocks, this, that, that, but actually just like little gigs that can help support your support you while you make the business.
Well, I mean, what most people don't know, and I learned this from my neighbors, obviously during COVID when people were losing their jobs and everything, our neighborhood has a WhatsApp group. The number of businesses that people start unintendedly. So I remember somebody, and I can't believe this is even a thing. Somebody had put in a group, they've been made redundant, and I think they had run out of food items, including toiletries. So the neighborhood, everybody was responding, oh, I can give you a toilet, I can give you this, what do you need? So what he then started to do as a thank you, he started to bake bread for these people. And then they came back in a group and said, well, this is really good, actually. I would rather buy that because I know all the ingredients and they're better for me than one buying from Tesco. So how would you charge? Then started a business. And then an IT person, not an IT person, had an interest in helping people because people started working from home, solving their problems. That then became a business. Somebody who's a retired police person started cutting people's garden. He does my garden now. So it doesn't have to be something you need a lot of capital to even start with. Look inside your house and see, what do I have? Do I have a spare room? Can I host international students? Can I do Airbnb? Can I cut some on grass? Can I bake a cake?
Now that you said that, you know, it's amazing, because now that they talk about it, I don't know if people know the story about Moses and the Red Sea, which Disney or whichever company has made a cartoon of it. And there's a part in the scripture where Moses was crying out and saying, oh, I need help, I need help. The Egyptians are coming, the Egyptians are coming. Mm-hmm. And God said to him, what's in your hand? I remember my pastor, or a couple of pastors have actually spoken on that word, mm-hmm. on that passage of scripture. And it's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we think it's intellect or this, sometimes it's just something, mm-hmm. like your grandma say, use your hands.
Use your hands. And it's funny to say that, because I've done a whole series on Moses at church. I'm actually this Sunday following but we sometimes we forget the obvious. What's in your hands that you can do? What's in your house that you can use? If you have a skill set, it's not going to take a lot of capital. If you have a car, can you do Uber delivery and Uber eat?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And how much of your time can you commit to that without compromising?
Yeah.
And still make an income.
Now that you said that, you know, I want to try a little side hustle.
I'm sure there's a number of things you can do.
Yeah.
If people are doing a podcast, for example, you're already doing it, you know?
Yeah. So someone said that, even my grandson said to me, because I made him some cookies for Christmas. They came over, I can't remember if it was Christmas Eve or whatever, they came over and I made some cookies and he was eating it. I was like, oh my God, Grandma, you should sell these. And I just laughed it off. But it's like what you say, what's in your hand? Use your hand, what's in your hand? So thank you again, Jennifer. Thank you so, so much. You've been amazing. Send me your details for sure.
Send me
your details. And hopefully, if Anita's around, we can all do like a meetup and do a catch up. That would be really
thank
nice.
Thank you for having me. I mean, we got in here, and I'm so grateful to you and to your husband because you've been so patient. I don't think
that's okay.
I don't think they would have been patient.
Listen, technology is something that back in the day I'd be fine with it, but now I'm like, I can't be arsed. It's just like, oh Lord. So thank God my husband is, and partly that's wrong as well because I know my husband's in IT. So some of the time he's like, can you just sort it? Whereas before I probably would have tried to sort it myself, but that's it's terrible. Just,
no, when we finished this morning, I was sitting there trying to work here because I was bugging, like, I don't get it. What is going on here? And what did he feel? I'm like, oh, I couldn't have fixed it. And I would have just gone to Apple and been even more frustrated. I don't think I could fix it because it's not about the laptop. It's about other factors playing in the background, which I think now with his recommendations will be resolved.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thanks again and lovely to see you and speak with you and we'll catch up. And for everyone, thank you for joining today, a conversation with a Black businesswoman with me, your host, Lillian Oliveri. And today we were joined by the lovely Jennifer Opari Aye, and we'll definitely touch base again. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.